Hey, welcome back to the Cats, Dogs, Apes, and Frogs podcast. I'm your host, Russell Corey. I am not a financial advisor. This is not financial advice. I just talk about my experiences as a retail investor. Started with a few shares of AMC, and now I will soon to be having over 2 trillion Decat tokens, which used to be Grumpy Cat coin, but it is migrating to its rebranding to Decat. The team that did this did an awesome job. I'm so excited. We had some IP, intellectual property issues with Grumpy Cat, because there is an actual trademark Grumpy Cat and they produce products, and they weren't real happy when we started as a cryptocurrency about us. And there was a little back and forth, and we sort of fell into, you know, we said, hey, we'll call ourselves Grumpy Cat Coin and we won't put out products and all this stuff. And they kind of left us alone after that, but that threat was always there. Well, this rebranding, it's still the same core team. It's still the same developer. It's just now we have a rebrand. We have a new cat. We have a new name to Cat. Much shorter, very good, very catchy. They just did such a great job with this, and I'm so blown away. I can't wait. I've migrated my coins, all my Grumpy Cats. I don't have any Grumpy Cat coin anymore. They're all in the migration wallet. And when the migration period is over in about 7 days, I think it's January 18th is when it will officially end. Then the launch of the new Decat token will start, and hopefully, I'm hoping for the best. I'm all in, you know, I can't wait. They did a great job. So I did the interview with Christopher Edward, and it went great. My sincere thanks to Christopher for coming on and doing the interview with me. And I'm just really happy. And it just goes to show what can happen, you know, when people can connect on the internet, when you're cordial, when you're open, and you're willing to take some advice, and you don't have your defenses up, and you're willing to talk, that good things can come out of it. And I hope my goal in 2024 is to reach out to more people, to network some more, and talk to some of the people involved that I've been following. But most importantly, I want to talk to other AMC apes about this experience. I want to know what your AMC stock story is, because I'm seeing a lot of posts of the big losses that people have suffered, myself included. And that takes a human toll. And sometimes it helps if you can talk to other people that understand what you've gone through. And hopefully we can be a platform for that. It's not to FUD AMC. I'm still holding my AMC shares. I hope they do well. I'm advocating for a plan B for your investing, whether it's to quit investing altogether. I'm not saying sell your AMC shares. I'm holding mine. Maybe things can turn around, but at a 90% loss, it's almost like, what's the point? You know, hang in there and hopefully things will change. Well, listen, I'm going to play the interview with Christopher. And once again, thank you, Christopher, for coming on. And I hope to have more interviews for you in the future. But this is Christopher Edward. So thanks for listening, everybody.
Jeff, thanks for being here with us. We'll go ahead and start. My name is Russell Corey. I'm the host of the Cats, Dogs, Apes, and Frogs podcast. It was originally the AMC stock story. And I started it in the summer of 2021. And I honestly thought it was going to be 10 episodes. We were going to have our squeeze like they had with GameStop. And every day I would put out an episode. And for those 10 days or those 10 episodes, what it would be like, you know, as an AMC ape and collecting all your attendees. And a funny thing happened on the way to on the recording those 10 episodes. They became about 100, over 100 episodes. And, it was what it was. It almost was like a therapy session, the podcast, became. And you can see some of the people that review it. They talk about, like, you know, this guy had so much energy, and you can sort of feel it weighing on him. But anyway, I appreciate you listening. This is really the first time I've talked to somebody that I don't know that's listened to the podcast, which is amazing. I have another podcast that I do called the Stories for Kids podcast, and I kind of do it with my kids. I originally started that one because I was telling them, you know, bedtime stories, and they'd always want to hear the same story. And I thought, well, if I record it, you know, I can just replay it for them every night. And I said, well, if I'm recording, I could actually make a podcast. So, you know, we sort of started that podcast together. And one time a mom emailed me some pictures that her son had done of some of the characters we had on the show. And it was such a highlight. And, so it's rare you do on my level, very small, when you do this and you actually make contact with somebody who listens to it. So it's amazing that you're out, because I'm a big fan of podcasts as well. And that's why I started the AMC stock story because I like podcasts. So thank you for listening. I'm curious, when did you start listening to – so I started it in I think like July maybe of 2021, and we were still doing okay at that point. But when did you start listening to it, Christopher? And then we'll talk about – I want to talk about your background, but I'm just curious about that aspect because that's sort of how we met.
Yeah. For sure, Russell. It would have been a few months after that because I can get into specifics later, but I had been following things. I like to keep up on financial news. I'm a lifelong kind of saver and investor. And it would have been a few months later, and I was trying to make sense of the meme stock trend or event. I don't call it a craze because it did happen, and there was some legitimate underpinnings to that that upended the entire kind of financial markets. But it was a few months later, and I remember when I was trying to make sense, and I saw a bunch of extreme views, especially on Twitter X and in reading. And then I came across your podcast for myself on Spotify. And when I did, you really kind of personified what was happening. And so when I found it, I remember binging about 30 episodes at once. So you must have been more than a few months in, and it kind of caught me up, but it really allowed me to realize what was going on and learn about it kind of with you, what felt like in real time to me.
Well, thank you. Now, your background, I've done a little bit of research on Twitter, you know, going through some of your posts, and then I looked at some of your background on LinkedIn. So you're involved in the energy, the oil industry, and in particular with the oil sands in Canada. Is that correct?
So, yeah, I spent a lot of my career in the nuclear power generation industry here in Ontario, Canada, and I'm what I would refer to as a generalist investor, kind of a traditional investor, old school economy with financials, a lot of energy, consumer discretionary, telecoms, insurance, that type of thing. So a lot of traditional investing on my part, but I have done a bit of a specialty in Canadian oil and gas in particular, which is kind of a lucrative sector, and I've kind of done okay with that. But I would definitely call myself a traditional investor, but it's my curious nature. I consider myself a bit of a student of investor psychology, and I was fascinated with the meme stock event when it happened, and I couldn't get enough. So I'm also consider myself a lifelong learner. Just a bit about myself too. I'm 56 years old now, so I'm a bit older than your demographic. But I retired full time about a year ago, and I'm living off the proceeds of investment. So I've been fairly successful. I've had my share of blunders, and I could tell you about those. Some of them have been fairly catastrophic, but on balance, I've done quite well. And we do like the Canadian stocks up here. So that's kind of my background as an investor.
And you are Canadian. I know you've worked around the world, but you're Canadian, born in Canada and raised?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm so. I'm from the steel city in Ontario, Canada. It's called Hamilton. It's kind of a sister to Pittsburgh and kind of the Pennsylvania steel towns. But now I live closer to Lake Huron area of kind of southwestern Ontario. But this is my home, yeah.
And looking at your resume, it looks like you've worked all over the world. Is that right? I saw Australia, Denmark, China. Is that correct?
You may have someone else there. The vast majority of my work has been domestic, but in the power generation industry, but mostly here in the country.
Got it. It is funny you mentioned the nuclear energy. My father, Joseph Corey, he was a nuclear engineer, and he wrote a book on, you know, project management and nuclear energy. His name's Joseph Corey. If you're interested, you can find his book on Amazon. But if you're ever interested in that sort of stuff, look him up. I'll hook you guys up.
That's amazing. It's a fascinating area. Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually pretty close in age. I think I'm about 54. I was class of 87 in high school, class of 91.
Okay, yeah. I'm just a couple of years ahead. And
yeah, a couple of 80s kids.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. And I loved reading. I loved hearing through the podcast, like your love of movies and your time in kind of LA in the entertainment industry. And I definitely felt a bit of a kinship there, Russell, just in terms of family person. We have three daughters, a little older now. But I definitely felt a kinship. And as I say, I learned a lot about the meme stock kind of event through your experiences. And I've always been a big fan. I would kind of binge the episodes whenever I found them. I swear there was one one weekend where I listened to about 30 at once and couldn't get enough. So it's that's cool to have that kind of a bit in common.
Well, I really appreciate you listening. And yeah, I love movies. And I think that was one of my weaknesses when it came to AMC and why this stock play had such a hold on me. I don't know about other people. I don't know if you I made a video the other day, and basically I'm at the point now where I'm telling AMC apes, guys, you need a plan B. I have my plan B. You're welcome to follow me and my plan B, as crazy and risky as it is. But find, you know, if you think AMC is going to fix your AMC problem, you might have some issues there. But I showed them a framed picture I had. I lived in for Disney, and I lived in Southern California. I lived in Burbank, California, and they had the Burbank AMC. And when I first moved there in 91, it was the AMC 12. Then it became the AMC 14. And I lived there on the weekends. That's what I would do. I would just go see movies.
Wow.
I was, you know, a bachelor, and I literally lived at that movie theater. And then they built a bigger one, the AMC 16, right across the street from it. So the last night that AMC 14 was going to be open, I went to see the last show I could find, which turned out to be Finding Nemo. I believe this was in 2003. And it was Finding Nemo. And what a beautiful movie to, you know, kind of end a run at a movie theater at. And I got out around midnight or so. And right across the street at the AMC, the new one they just built, the Hulk, they were having shows of the midnight shows of the Hulk. So I saw the last show at the 14, wow. And one of the first, not the first show at the one, but one of the first shows they had. And I saved my movie stubs and this magazine article that was like in the Burbank, you know, City Magazine. And I had it framed, and I put my movie watcher card in there. I loved AMC, and I loved those theaters. And I think I loved movies, and I always used to joke when I thought AMC was going to squeeze and I was going to be a rich man. I said, you know, I struggled to be a screenwriter from about 91 to about 2015. And I gave it everything. I gave up my family. I grew up in North Carolina, and I moved out right out of college, and I stayed in LA, and I gave it my all. Luckily, I found a job with Disney, and that sort of, you know, saved it for me. But I sacrificed a lot for this dream to be a filmmaker, screenwriter, and later a filmmaker. And it just never happened for me. And I would joke that, you know, I'm finally going to make money in the movie industry, but it's going to be as an investor in AMC. And that could have been part of it as well. Like, oh, it's going to be this redemption story. But there were so many things that played into it. But I love, and that's what I was trying to convey to the, you know, the apes I was talking to in that video. I loved AMC, and I was all in this play. I had everything, but I've come to the realization, like, guys, this is not working. You know, at some point, you have to take a step back and say, this isn't working. And my concern now is that as I see posts from people and they talk about how much they're down, because if they haven't sold, they technically haven't lost it yet, but they talk about how much they're down. And I'm in pretty deep. But I've seen posts where people talk about being down $500,000, you know, $100,000, $40,000. And these people, they're true apes. They're not funding this project, but it's finally starting, the human cost of this is finally starting to come out. And one of the things I want to do, and starting with your interview, obviously you're not an ape, but is reach out to people and just give them a platform to talk about what they've been through. Because there is a human toll to what has happened. And in all fairness, we were warned. People said this was going to be a penny stock. And whether there was manipulation or not, that's not what this is about. It's just about looking at the reality of it. That a lot of people invested a lot in this. And whether it was a criminal scheme by short hedge funds or AMC, or whether it was just a dumb investment, whatever that was, throw that out. There's human beings that are suffering. And if you listen to the podcast I did the other night, I talked about, and it got to me at the end that this was.
I heard it.
Yeah, people went into this trying to help their family, trying to have a better life. And it's crazy that it happened. And why I couldn't cut myself off. Because listen, I bought Virgin Galactic shares And I watched it for a day and I said, I'm getting out of this. And I sold it. I've had other things. I buy and sell. I don't know what it was about this play that became so tribal and such
just a tribal bond. Yeah.
But it's crazy. Well, anyway, so, all right, you have a background in Wall Street. You started listening then, and I'll talk briefly just about how we're in this spot now. You had made a comment on my Twitter, and you said, you know, Russell, you asked for feedback. Please don't block me. And you basically said, you know, these Hail Mary plays that you're going into are not sound investing. And it's funny you mentioned don't block me, because I've reached out to people, whether it's just outright shilling, like, hey, maybe you should cover Grumpy Cat, and people block right. you. They say you're a shill, you're a con man, you're a grifter, and fair enough. But to the AMC apes, it's like, hey, you're shilling an investment that's 90% down, and you're wow. calling me the grifter. But yeah. regardless of that, you know, instead of, you know, being defensive about it, I said, you know, Christopher, you're right that, you know, I was a very conservative investor before I did this. And there were, if you listen to the podcast, you're familiar with the story. I had a Roth IRA and I had $1,000 in cash sitting in it. And at the time, Facebook had gone public and it had gone down in price. It was around $20. And I thought, I'm on Facebook. All my friends are on Facebook. This sounds a lot like Apple when everybody thought Apple was struggling. And look at Apple now. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take $600 of the $1,000 and buy 30 yes. shares of Facebook, yeah. get $20. And it went up to over $300. And I was always haunted that, you know, and I had other mutual funds and, you know, that I just was had left alone. And I was like, God, if I had tapped into that stuff and went all in on Facebook, I could have made six figures or more. And I was yeah. always haunted by that. I was like, how many times am I going to get an opportunity like that? Where you see the Apple, where you see, you know, and right. I thought that's what AMC was going to be. But and this is the thing about now when people talk about AMC being a long-term, you know, fundamentals play.
Yeah, like a value play.
It was yep. never a fundamental. It was always a short squeeze play.
Yeah.
And you know, that's how I got into it. So, I answered you back and I said, you know what, you're right. This is my I'm in Grumpy Cat Coin right now, soon to be DeCat. And I said, this yep. is my last, you know, go around that. You're right, and if I could go back in time, I would change things. So I always appreciate it, and we had a nice exchange after that and compared to some of the other yeah. ones. But go ahead and talk about that. What did you think when you wrote me? What did you think I would say?
Well, and I'll take a step back to it. I'd like to just talk about what got me interested in AMC in the first place, if I could, and then I'll get to that.
Yeah,
I'll be quick. Well, thanks. So during the pandemic, the job I was in required me to be at work, but the building I was in was completely empty and I was literally all alone and had about 20% of my workload to do my typical workload. So I had a lot of free time and I was listening to Twitter X and doing a lot of reading. And all of a sudden I remember hearing GameStop first. I remember I was in my car. It was CBC radio and they're talking about the short squeeze and wow. And I'm fascinated by investing. I've been investing since I was 18 years old. And so that piqued my interest. But then on Twitter, I started seeing AMC. And the thing that made me laugh, Russell, was here in Canada, we don't have AMC, but we did have the AMC car, which is American Motors Corporation, which was bought by Chrysler in 1980.
That's right.
And I'm like, what are these people talking about AMC? So I really started to go down the rabbit hole. And then, of course, soon caught on to, yes, they've had to shut down because of the pandemic and people are shorting them. And so it kind of became kind of a fascinating thing for me. But the thing that surprised me most back then was just the conviction and the extreme views on it. And it really sucked me in as kind of a student of what I consider myself investor psychology. I never really invested, although I did have my share of kind of missteps. We can get into that later if you want. But and then I've been hooked ever since. And as I say, your podcast kind of put a face, it peopleized it for me. It put a face to what was going on and allowed me to make more sense of it. Because I'll tell you why my big rationale while I was so fascinated was I'm an investor in boring investment grade stocks that would put you to sleep, but they churn out profits year after year and they're good solid companies. They have investment grade balance sheets, but they were getting killed in 2000 and 2001. And I was like, why are my name's dying on the vine? And then you're hearing like NFTs and some of the crypto, and then the meme stocks are just Terry, you know, taking right off. And it really, it got me wondering, like, am I at risk here? Do I need to learn about this? So I forced myself to learn as much as I could about everything. And just so I could keep up, because I felt maybe I'm becoming a dinosaur and I'm missing something here. And, but as it turned out, it did end the way it ended. And I'm still just immensely passionate about it and kind of interested in it, because I would always think, what if I got investors interested in the plays I like, the boring pipelines and telecom companies and banks? Wouldn't that be amazing if you got regular investors interested in these companies? And what would that do for them instead of them kind of getting crushed like they were coming out of the recession or out of the pandemic induced recession? So for me, it was a bit of self-preservation that got me into this, that said, you know, I really better learn about these things because I might get left behind. And it really changed my whole worldview there for a little bit about what was quality, what wasn't, what was popular. And it's been a fascinating thing to watch for me. I'll be very honest with you. Oops. I've still got you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
So you've been watching. Now, you were lucky. You did not have any investments in meme stocks or anything like that. Is that right?
That's correct. I was kind of I've had some long held positions in Canada. We love our banks. I know in the States there's about 5,000 different banks, but we've got our six banks. They operate via a government charter. They've got a protected monopoly essentially, and they do quite well. They sailed through the global financial crisis. They sailed through COVID, and they're just strong. So I really have always just stuck with the kind of the Canadian blue chip equities, some fixed income, some money market, but it never took away my fascination for what was going on in the broader world with I'd say younger investors too, and just being kind of caught up in this event, and it captured my interest, but I largely did steer clear of that.
Yeah, my great hope was that it was going to squeeze, and then with that money that I got, then I would find some, you know, no fee index funds that paid dividends, or, you know, I was getting it all set up, and it just, you know, it did what it did. It started to go down, and you're like, oh, okay, well, we're back, you know, we're break even now. Oh, wow, it dipped a little lower. Okay, well, it'll come back. And then it would go, oh, wow, it's in the 40s now. You know what, I'm going to buy, just for that, I'm buying more. You know, you hedge funds, you think you can, watch me. And then it go to the 30s, and now you're like, oh, wow, this, you know, now we're kind of down here. And then it just kept going lower. And I remember in December 2021, you know, our kids were still at home doing remote school. So yes. I ended up leaving my job, and I was doing Instacart deliveries, and I would sit with them during the day, and I would go do deliveries, and I was just watching the stock. And I remember when it got to like $25, calling my wife and just being, you know, I'm so sorry I got us into this. And $25 then would be $250 right now a share. And, you know, you just, at the time, you never know where it's going. You can only see where you are. You know, it's only when you look back at the chart, you see all the peaks and valleys. And
it's incredible. You know,
it was just hard to break away. And I remember at one point, and, you know, this is all still fairly new, but it's all so clear to me. I remember all these things so vividly. But I remember when we got back to like $50, and my mother-in-law, we're talking to my mother-in-law about it. And she's like, why aren't you selling? And I'm like, why? We just got back to $50. We're on our way. And you just, those conversations haunt me. And I know my son, he went to a birthday party recently. And I remember there was one of the dads there. And I remember talking to him at the time the craze really started. And I'm like, hey, are you going to invest in AMC? And he's like, no, it's gambling. And I'm like, oh, this guy doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. So what do you think happened? What is your take on the apes, what you see? If you take a step back, and it's not about judgment. It's about honestly taking a step back and saying, you know, this happened or what happened? Because you say you studied these things. What's your take on it?
Yeah, and thanks for asking, Russell. And I'll just say before that, all the stories you've told just up to now, I was kind of with you every step of the way. I'm an avid hiker, and I would just listen to these, and I was kind of gunning for you the whole time, saying, I hope this thing turns around. And, you know, if there's one meme coin that makes it, I hope it's Decat. I read today about, or heard you one today about the migration and everything. I'm following that now. But at the time, I was fascinated by the investors. It was, I know it was oftentimes a bit of a younger demographic. demographic. It was stimulus related to people having not a lot to do and maybe a little bit of cash on hand. And I understand that people kind of got swept up in it. You know, and not to be critical of anyone, because I'm not, there's no Schadenfreude in this where you're kind of taking pleasure. It's not, I'm the type of person who I'm kind of up with people. I root for other people. And I just was fascinated with the story because I've been fascinated with investing for as long as I've known. But for me, it's just been maybe the bit of the lure of the lottery ticket, or maybe a bit of a get rich quick scheme, something that also there is that whole theme of kind of sticking it to the man and to the people shorting and the hedge funds and so forth. And I think it just, and then I think Twitter and social media, stock twits and Weeble and all these kind of played a huge part in it too, and all these different sources of media where people can kind of get each other frothed up over things. And it's just, I think it was just a kind of a one-time thing. I'm not saying, I guess I won't say it won't happen again, but yeah, I think it was just a bit of a mania that happened around what was happening originally with GameStop and what did happen for a time with AMC. And I just think it was the lure of wealth and riches that kind of brought people in. And then to see people now still pushing it, and again, I criticize no one. I think now it's a bit of almost a bit of a reticence to just say, hey, you know, I fell for something. I've got a good story for if you ever want to hear that one, but spectacular losses on my part back in the day. But I think there's a real reluctance for people to say, you know what, I'm not gonna keep buying. It's not gonna come back. It's not gonna take off. I think what do they call it? Hubris or a bit of pride. And I feel sorry for people when I hear that, because it really is a case of throwing good money after bad when you just kind of keep going and keep going and keep going, as opposed to just saying, you know what, I got this one wrong. I'm gonna take my marbles and walk away and maybe take another stab at a different approach. And I think there's a real hesitance in people to do that and to crystallize those losses. It's sad, but I think it's human nature.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard. It's yep. Even if what I was advocating to AMC8 was, listen, I'm not saying sell, because I think when you're down 90%, what's the point at that
exactly
point? You know, it's like you're down so much, what's the other 10% gonna matter? And maybe it comes back. And what I was trying to say is, you know, the strength of the apes is not AMC. It's the apes, that there's 3.8 million AMC investors that have come into existence, and all these networks and everything that's going on. And I would say it like, imagine you put this massive 3.8 person army together and you're trying to invade this impenetrable castle. For whatever reason, they have a wizard that's got a force field, or it's just better engineering, or whoever was leading this army wasn't doing a good job, right? And you have, yeah. And everyone, half the people want to keep fighting. Half the people are like, well, we're going to, you know, they're fighting the other people that want to keep fighting. And you say, hey, guys, we have 3.8 million people here. Right over there, you know, is a forest. We can cut down trees. We can build a village. You know, or there's another village over here, and these are, you know, peaceful fishermen, and they happen to have a lot of gold. Why don't we go invade them and get all that gold? And then if you want to go back to attacking the castle, go back and attack the castle. But if it doesn't make sense. But you tell people that, and they're like, you're a shill, you want us to give up. And it's like, you know, but to me, it's like, find a plan B, find something else, and use your strength as apes. I know, I'm not talking about market manipulation, but yes, you have connections and you have people, and what are the different options out there? And that's what I advocate. But it is so hard to admit that defeat. And all I would say is, look, if I was half down, I would probably consider selling. I probably, you know, with these ETFs on the horizon, I would have considered, you know what, I'm selling it. I'll put it in Bitcoin. I'll put it in Ethereum. Or, right. I'll put it in Apple. I'll put it in Tesla, or something, like you say, just a more sound investment. If I was half down and said, you know what, I bet I could make up that other half. But at 90%, you know, it's you're so far down. And the other thing I think about is, and not to be overly dramatic, but when John F. Kennedy was killed, you know, Jacqueline Kennedy famously wore that pink suit. And when he was killed, you know, she got blood on her, and people were trying to get her to change out of that suit, and she refused. And she said, I want the world to see what they did. And that's a part of it for me is, like, I'm holding on to these shares. I'm hoping to find a way out of this. But, like, it's that reminder of, you know, you got yourself into this. And on a smaller scale, once I sort of got into crypto a little more and these meme stocks, there was one stock, there was one crypto that people called out. And I thought, oh, this thing, maybe it's going to go crazy. And I bought $40 of it. And for $40, I got 2 trillion of these coins, right? And wow. And it went and it tanked. And now that $40 investment is worth 39 cents. Thank God it was only $40. But I keep it. One, it would cost too much to try to do anything with it. With the fees. That's the other thing about crypto. It gets a little expensive with the fees. But it sits there as a reminder. Don't ever do that again. Don't chase these pop-up projects that you don't know and you're not familiar with. Even if you think you're going to make money, don't do it. Find a community that you can trust and put your faith in. And that's what happened with Grumpy Cat, that every day from the summer, probably July of 2003, we have held space calls. We have DB Crypto, and 4Gage started it, and then now it's DB Crypto and Simon. And every day, Monday through Friday, they hold an hour-long space call. Who does that? No one's paid. They just do it. And we develop that trust, and then we have Chase, who does space calls on Saturday. So really, from Monday through Saturday, there's a Grumpy Cat, space call that we get together, and we built that trust, and you see the people that are making the commitment. You can find the wallets, if you pay attention.
Yes.
And you can say, who's selling, who's holding, is the group sticking together? Listen, and I say it's a risk. You prepare to lose your money because you probably will. I'm not saying you will, but I'm just saying that. So if anybody invested and say, you told me to invest in it. And I said, I also said, be prepared. But it's that trust that I have in this community, and that's why I'm in it with them, that we built that trust. But if you have a project that opens up and it's been on for 2 days and you want to invest your money in it, good luck. I'll never do that again. And what's going to be interesting, you mentioned Grumpy Cat migrating to Decat, and
I've been following you.
The interesting thing about that is normally when these projects launch, everybody that rushes into them, they have no community ties. Maybe a few people know each other. And if it's a pure out-and-out scam or pump and dump or rug pull, the few people that buy in big know each other, and they give each other the wink and yank every fund when they get exit liquidity. What's going to be interesting about Decat is you have a core group of whales and holders and people that are visible in the community, whether you want to call them influencers or not. That's the rock of this project, as opposed to these things where people jump in, they do a quick 10, 30X, and they yank their money out. And then you go look at any chart when a project launches, there's a high peak, and then it goes down, and good luck, coming back. The successful project manages to build their way back, and then most of the time, it's just a dead project after that. It never recovers from that huge pump and dump. So that's why I'm hopeful about that. But let's talk. You mentioned some of this, the investments that went bad, and the fact that you're retired now. Is that right?
I am. So I consider myself fortunate because I did learn at a reasonably early enough time and to have a good core of diversified investments to avoid things like concentration risk. And so I did retire at the end of 2022. I'm living full time on dividends, kind of living the dream, right? So on my portfolio, and I follow things closely. I have a very active life. My wife is still working, but she's probably not far behind. But I had one where I definitely want to come on. I don't want anyone to think like I'm talking down from the mount. Like I've made every mistake there is to make in investing in one no more than just about 5 years ago. Was a company called Northern Dynasty Minerals. It's one of the largest. It kind of reminds me of Hycroft a bit because it's one of the largest gold and precious metal mines in the world. It's in Alaska, or at least properties. And pretty much as soon as Donald Trump got into office, the whole thing was canceled, and the stock went it was one of those ones where it should have gone to the moon, and it eventually kind of went to almost nothing, and is maybe around 30 cents or something now. And it provided a decent tax write-off that year, which is, I guess, a wonderful thing, but it was a spectacular loss, and I had a fair size investment in it. And it just, but you know what, looking back, I never read their statements. I never read their balance sheet. I just got kind of caught up in it, and it was a good stock. I traded in and out of it several times and made a few bucks. And then one time I just said, that's it, I'm going for it. And so my message there is, big loss, like, it taught me a lot, but this is not me chiming in, saying, you know, you're doing it wrong or this and that. Like, I have been there, and I was just saying out of caring because I feel like I know you. I was like, wow, in my experience, it's really the slow and steady, boring ones that eventually, the ones that compound earnings year in and year out are the ones that eventually kind of are what do it for you. But yeah, I've had my share, and earlier on, I've had a few others that I can barely remember, but and they kind of taught me what my ideal approach was, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, you had tweeted a thing about the Boston Celtics. It was about Larry Bird.
Yeah, I love that.
Larry Bird was notoriously a cheap player. He saved his money. And yeah. He talked about how a lot of the other guys were living high. And, you know, as a professional athlete, you only have so many years where you're going to earn that kind Absolutely. Of an income. And then you've got the rest of your life to live. Now, I know
yeah. a lot of And I didn't know now, that about Larry till I read that. I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? I'm a huge Boston Celtics fan. Cool. And I would read about the team, and I always remember reading about Danny Ainge. And
yes,
Ainge, yeah. He would be in the locker room reading the Wall Street Journal and talking to other players about stocks and what they should invest in.
Wow.
And what's interesting, and that was Danny Ainge, so I always respected him for that. And what's interesting is as Larry and Danny, you know, got older and moved in as coaches and executives, Danny Ainge was the one that actually ended up running the Boston Celtics. Now, Larry has had a good career in Indiana, but it's interesting that Larry was, you know, Larry the legend. But when it came to, you know, running that team, Danny Ainge, you know, got the job. So I thought that was
amazing.
But I love that story. But I love Larry Bird, one of my favorite basketball players. And I've actually been to French Lick. I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about going to all 50 states.
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, but when I went to Indiana, I made sure to go to French Lick. I never thought I would ever go to French Lick, but it was very cool to actually go and see, like, this Larry Bird Boulevard and, you know, all that sort of thing. I'm hoping that was all 20 years ago. My dream would be if DeCat goes to the moon and I can retire and do the traveling. I'd love to create a lot of these trips, you know, 20 years later. It's just, it's hard
That's
to
so
do
cool.
on a budget. You know, you can manage a couple trips, but, you know, back then, it was a lot easier and cheaper to travel, but I was also a bachelor. It was just me.
Right.
And I could find a cheap hotel and just eat a bag of beef jerky at the gas station and with a family and a wife. That's not going to cut it this go around.
That's awesome. Well, that story with Larry really resonated with me because I'm kind of similar. I'm 6'1", but I'm not a great basketball player, but I'm similar in the regard of just kind of being modest and under the radar. I remember when I retired at my company, people usually go a lot longer. And I remember people were shocked. They're like, you're retiring. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, how the heck are you doing that? And I said, well, you don't want to have to say that. Hey, I've been saving my whole life. I'm an aggressive saver. I'm an active investor, pretty astute person. And I remember people being shocked, but that's how I wanted to live was I got my time to myself from freedom. I still drive my old minivan. The house is nothing that you'd look twice at. But I like going about my business that way and not trying to stand out. And I think that's also a lesson that when I read that little meme about Larry, it's like, oh my God, we're almost the same person in that regard. Like I don't want to be the least bit showy, and I'd rather just spend money on my family and investments if I see fit. And that really hit me. I remember what I said, I have a newfound respect for Larry Bird. I had no idea it was that was his MO.
Yeah, very true. And you also tweeted, I think it was a picture of like a Toyota Corolla or Camry.
Yeah.
Show me you're a millionaire, or tell me you're a millionaire without telling me it is. And it's true. It's the people that live modestly that are able to save that money. And I'm sure I've talked about this on the podcast about the FIRE movement, financially independent, retire early.
Yes. I follow that quite closely too. Yeah.
And I've said that if you can retire, if you don't have to work a 9-to-5 job, you're basically going to live twice as long as somebody that is. You're going to have twice as much of the life. If you really break it down to what is life, like the weekend, when you can do what you want to do, That's actually living. Go and listen. Some people may have a job they love and they would do it even if they didn't get paid. I'm not one of those people. Unfortunately, listen, I'm happy. I lucked into a very nice job and I worked for a great company, and it's sort of
that's great.
The needs that I needed. I think I may have talked about this, but I've been a coordinator most of my life. So I just sit at a desk all day, and on my break, I would go get a Coke, get a bag of chips, and I was just at a desk all day. And when I got a job working at a window company, they manufactured windows and they delivered them. And I looked at the drivers who have to carry the windows off the truck and the people that worked in our warehouse who have to carry the, and these are big, heavy windows. They were a little dinged up, but they were so strong and in such good shape because they basically were at the gym all day. They didn't have to go to the gym at night. They were there. And I said, "Guy, I'm in my 50s, so I can't go, you know, moving furniture all day." But I was like, I'd love to find something where I'm more active. And this job that I have now is a nice combination of being active, but also more of a, you know, coordinator job as well. So, you know, I'm lucky in that regard. But if I didn't have to work, I'd love it. You know, you offer me a Lambo and I still have to work, or a Hyundai and I can retire and do whatever I want, I'll take the Hyundai every time at this point.
This is the thing too. I just wanted one quote I read recently, Russell, because I'm a very modest person, although I've done well for myself in time and always lived within my means. And the quote that I kind of stick with is kind of quiet rich people act poor so they can kind of blend in, and poor people act rich so they can stand out. And it's kind of I see that all around me too, where people that you know have nothing are driving the new BMW and they're taking the three trips a year and they've got the big monster house and everything. And I just say no. Part of my thing was my time and wanting that time to myself and kind of pursue my own hobbies and interests. And but with that has to come some sacrifice. So things are good, things are comfortable, but it all comes down to what you want and how you value your time. I couldn't agree with you more.
It's like the Warren Buffett. You know, that's how, you know, he lived. And well, that's my big hope. My big hope is to get. I thought it was going to be the AMC stock squeeze. And when that didn't work out, as I was started to enter this world, that's when I learned about crypto. And I'm just like most people, I thought it was a scam. I didn't think it was real and I would never touch it. And then when AMC started a relationship with Dogecoin, I thought, oh, wow, we get the Doge people now on the AMC side. That's going to bring the squeeze. And I said, you know what, I'm going to buy $50 in Dogecoin just so I can say I did that. And I bought my $50 in Dogecoin and realized that was not going to do anything. And then now that I was following crypto, I heard about this thing, Shiba Inu. And I'm like, oh, wow, I can get millions of this Shiba Inu. And the day I think I bought it, it jumped up. And I remember telling my wife about this. And she's like, buy more. And, of course, as soon as we hit the buy button, it went down. But we were kind of hooked at that point, and I just kept watching Shiba Inu for weeks, and then it just went on that monster run. I tell this story. January 1st, 2021, you could have bought $1 of Shiba Inu. There were 10 zeros after the decimal point, and then the real numbers started. Wow. October 27th, 2021, not even a year later, October 27th, 2021, you could have sold that $1 of Shiba Inu for $1 million. It ate six zeros.
And, that's amazing.
But that's the thing. You had to have bought it with those 10 zeros. And even then, it somewhere between then and you know, October, you still could have made some pretty healthy profits. But that's how insane that it can be. And that's why, I mean, tell me some real estate you can do that in. Tell me the small business you can start for a dollar. And yeah, I'll start some of those businesses. And I get it. It's risky and it's crazy. And I actually did a video on, you know, how do you find these things? And my theory at the time was, well, if you find them on crypto.com or Gemini, they've probably gone through some sort of vetting process. So they're not a scam. And I remember I went to CoinGecko and I was like, well, what the hell is out there with like 10 zeros, 9 zeros? And I just did screen grabs of these crazy sounding coins. And I'm like, would you buy Oogie Boogie coin or would you buy And I almost had a heart attack because I knew there was some Pepe stuff on there. But when Pepe ran, I said, dear God, don't tell me I put Pepe on there as an example of a terrible thing to invest on. And then it went on that, you know, 2 month run that it had. I didn't actually see Pepe, but I missed it. And that's when I learned to actually, instead of buying it on Gemini or crypto.com, because by then it's probably too late if you want to buy the huge amount for a low amount of dollars, right? Meaning hundreds to thousands, but you're going to get billions or trillions of it, right? And by the time it's on crypto.com or Gemini, it's already had that run. That's this, you know, that was the sweet spot where you can load up and it's less risk, you know. Like, take the example, one of my favorite people in crypto, Pro the Doge, the Slumdoge Millionaire. The reason I actually got into Copycat, he bought Dogecoin, but he had to invest $250,000 into Dogecoin when it was 4 cents. Now, when it went to 16, he was a millionaire, but he went all in to get that $250,000. Whereas if he, you know, if you could have gotten Dogecoin with, you know, 4 or 5 zeros in front of it, well, now you only have to do like 2,000 or 3,000 to get that amount. And that's the gamble, but it's really finding, you know, finding that project. And like I said, I liked what I heard with Grumpy Cat. The people that were involved in it, they seemed really smart, really connected. Like, there were rumors that there were Ethereum Foundation people involved there. A lot of big Shiba Inu whales were involved. There were lawyers that had done work with the SEC. They would come on these calls, and it was very intriguing. I'm like, these don't sound like crypto bros to me. And at lunch, I would go walking, and I would hear these calls. I would never speak on them. And then I went off and I started making, you know, videos, because I create content. I did it for AMC. I did it for Dogecoin. So I started making these Grumpy Cat coin videos. And then I would listen to the call to see if anybody talked about the video on the call. They never would. And then finally, one of our you know, OG guys, Tim Tanner, he finally mentioned my videos. And I'm like, yay, they mentioned. And then I finally spoke on my first call. And it was just like the floodgates opened up. I mean, you see me now. And it was just like the floodgates opened up. And I just started talking about it. And since then, you know, I've been a part of the community. And the people, like, I call my parents every Sunday. I talked about it. I call my parents every Sunday. My brother's on the call. I don't know if he's still listening or not, Matt, if he's out there. But, occasionally I'll call him. My high school friends, we do a video chat maybe once or twice a month, and that's it. My Grumpy Cat community, my family, almost every day I'm listening to and talking to them, and that's the trust we built. And these are that's my friends. You know, in your 50s, it's harder to meet people that, you know, your friends are your friends. And yeah, I interact with my kids' friends' parents, but they're not really my friends. And my work friends, we're friendly when we're working together, but rarely once I leave a job do I see them. Whereas these Grumpy Cat, you know, I really hope this works out, and like, we get to, you know, spend the rest of our lives traveling the world and visiting with each other and going to these different places. But it certainly has been very enjoyable making these connections. But like I said, this is it. This is the last rodeo. And if this doesn't work out, you know, I'll probably make a few sound decisions for investments, but you know, I'm grinding it out at that point. I'm jealous that you're retired early. I will be grinding it out, but that goes to speak for having an investment strategy. The one thing I'd love to give my kids, if I can't give them some money from one of these crazy plays, but like, start investing for them. That my parents, my dad, he was in the army, and he would have a certain percentage of his paycheck go to savings bonds every month. And he gave me these savings bonds when I moved to California. And occasionally in the beginning, I would need to, you know, they hit at that point for 20 years, they earn interest and then they mature. They don't, whatever it is, that's it. You can wait as long as you want to cash them in, but you're not going to get any more money. So when they matured, I finally started cashing them in. And that sort of kept me going when I didn't have steady work. But I always stuck with me this idea of saving. But I often joke, I was like, you know, maybe with those treasury bonds, you could have thrown in a few shares of Apple from 1982 or 84 or something.
Right.
But that's what I'd love to do for my kids, is they have so many years ahead of them, is make some of these sound, like you say, these sound investments that can build over time.
Yeah, but, I've done the same with my kids. Where we have the variant of what you guys have, the Roth IRA. We have, it's called the TFSA, or tax free savings account. And we have 3 girls have them, and I've put them all into kind of very safe ETFs, but geared for growth because they're so young. And I said, you know what, just leave those things, and in 30 years, you're going to have something, but it's also hard to do it. You want to explore other things, and some of them have had to dip into them every now and then too for life. But you try to pass that stuff on. My father kind of taught me a lot. He wasn't an educated guy, but he did well in business and passed on a lot of money smarts to me. But I try to do the same. It's part of what we do for sure.
Yeah. Well, I was going to try to keep this thing to about an hour.
So, yeah.
You know, well, in the end here, if there's anything else you want to say, please, you know, feel free to speak. But I'll just ask you a couple. So you've listened to this podcast. Is there anything you've wanted to ask me, or any moments like your favorites or something that I think to me, one of my favorite moments is when we had gone down and we were finally in the black again on AMC, and I played
AMC. I remember
back in black, and I was so happy. And now, whenever I have an investment and I'm back in the black, I always play AC/DC. But are there any moments? I'm just curious. Are there any moments?
I do have one
stand out for you. Or go ahead.
I do have one, Russell. Again, I've been with you every step, whether you knew it or not. I'm a very loyal person, and I was like, wow, this guy. I remember telling my wife, I said, this guy could be like a friend. He so many people, the people I was reading about were just kind of really extreme. I thought, but this guy. And my one question would be, you've gone through the podcast. It's kind of gone dark a few times, and were you busy at work, or what was going on during those times? Because I remember there were months where I'm like, oh, what happened to Russell? But do you recall when that was? Yeah. Or maybe it was job related?
A lot of it was the lawsuit stuff, the legal stuff with AMC and the courts, that there was just nothing going on. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't have any great insight to, you know, the legal aspect of it. And you were just sort of waiting for, you know, what was going to happen. You can speculate all you want, but that was part of it. I'm trying to think. Like, and sometimes I would go back to making videos on my YouTube channel. So my YouTube channel actually got monetized after my Doge Alone Mars video. I made a Doge Alone Mars video when I got into that, because I looked at the AMC community, and there's so many people creating YouTube channels. I never got any traction with AMC videos. So that was the thing. I got into Shiba Inu, and after Shiba Inu pulled back, I said, I need more zeros. I got to find something with more zeros. Yeah. And I saw Doge Alone Mars, and that's when I got my first billion Doge Alone Mars. And even that wasn't enough. And I ended up getting up to the point of like 10 billion Doge Alone Mars coins. And then when FTX happened, it scared me. And at that point, money was a little tight back then. And I'm like, right now I'm like, you know, I've got about like $6,000 into Grumpy Cat. And if it goes south, that sucks. Nobody likes to lose money, but we'll recover from that. Right. But at that time with what was invested in right after FTX, where just money just disappears and accounts are frozen. And I just said, I can't take that kind of chance. I look on my Gemini account and I find out the Winklevoss twins are, you know, in jail. So that was it. I cashed out, and it was very hard because I felt a part of the Doge Alone Mars community. And it was like when I finally hit that swipe button and sold everything, I could not look at that ticker for at least a day or two.
Because what if, crazy. Right? Yeah.
So a lot of times, I would focus on making videos because that's where my time was trying to, you know, get at that point. After the big video went, that you have to have certain metrics to be monetized.
Yes.
And that got me to such a point where it was achievable. It was a grind, but you had to get the hours and you had to get the views. And I was just cranking out videos trying to get there. And then when you get there, you're like, okay, now I can make money. And you spend a week working on a video and it gets 5 views, 10 views, and you make up 10 cents. You're like, wait a minute, how does this make sense to put that much time? Like, I was making more money with Instacart than I was with YouTube. And then at one point, I did a bad thing because you're monetized. And part of that is, you know, you can't just throw someone else's video on your channel and get paid for it. There's this a website where you can get free clips. And the people that post them there, they're like, it's free use. Yes, you can use it. You don't have to credit us, but there are the videos there. And there'd be all these little, you know, clips, funny enough, of like cats and dogs. And those little shorts got a lot of views on YouTube Shorts. So I would take the video, I would credit the person and say, hey, if you want to see this video, here's a link to their site or whatever. And I would put on it, and you would see my views spiked. And even though I wasn't making any money off it, I thought, wow, I can get to like a million. I wanted to get to like a million views or something.
Amazing. Well,
that spike got YouTube's attention, and they said, nope, you've been demonetized for a month, because you're reusing content. And I'm like, all right, it's like the speeding ticket. You got me. All right, I go to traffic school. So after a month, I took all those videos off. I reapplied and said, nope, you're not eligible again. I'm like, what do you mean? And you'd have to wait 30 days to reapply. And after about 3 or 4 months of this, I'm like, they're not going to give me my – I don't know what I did, but they're not going to give me my channel back. And then I started a new YouTube channel, and that's when I did my Disney Buys AMC video, and that got like 15,000 views. And again, it got me to a level where it was a grind, but you could get monetized again. So I got monetized like in April of 2023, but that was also the same time Grumpy Cat came into being, and that's when I started doing the Grumpy Cat videos. So a lot of times I was focused on YouTube as well. I kind of bounced back and forth. And like I said, and it was the court case that – there was nothing going on. That's why these people that, you know, they think they're developing their cases, or they're going to take AMC to court or a class action.
Right.
I'm like, good luck. That takes years to do. And
yeah, it's a tough slog. Yeah.
All that time and energy, and there's no guarantee there's going to be a good outcome from that. No. It's just like,
it's the same with class actions. They just, I mean, it's a bit of a faint hope, but just a lot of time and very little kind of comes of it typically.
Yeah. But I appreciate you listening. You know, like I said, I'm a fan of certain podcasts, and I'm just a regular guy. You know, I have a background, you know, with writing and storytelling. But I try to, you know, it's funny. I used to have the music and everything, and now life is just, there's just no time. And one of the nice things is that they have a podcast record app now for Podomatic, which hosts my thing. And I literally just, you know, I push the button, I record, it's one take, and that's it. And then I publish it, and it's very simple, but it allows me to keep it current. And I think that's what, and now there's obviously stuff to talk about with, you know, with Grumpy Cat and going through this migration. So it's a much more interesting time right now. And
Absolutely. And
I would just say with the AMC Apes, it's like, listen, you know, a coin needs a community, right? Without a community, a coin is not going to be successful. And AMC is the community without a coin. And the math is that hard, that if you had a fraction of the AMC investors started investing in a meme coin, and that word got out, and you bought and hold, it's math that, just like what happened with Shiba Inu, it's not easy, it's not guaranteed, it's absolutely risky, and people are going to trade and scalp and do all those things, and you've got all these bots now that just programs that just come in and buy and trade. But if you can overwhelm that with the sheer numbers of AMC, you know, I feel like amazing things can happen. But whether someone does that, or they just go another way, if they go for just a more conservative route and try and build back, you know, that's my advice for AMC Apes, is find that plan B. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They want to hear keep fighting, keep buying popcorn, keep doing everything. And God bless them. I still have my shares. And if it goes up, I'm rewarded. And what I would say to them is, if I have my shares and I have my plan B, if AMC goes up, guess what? I win. Right. AMC does not go up, but my plan B works, guess what? I win. But you don't have a plan B. So, you know, and I tell my wife, I said, you know, people following the AMC stock story now, cats, dogs, apes and frogs, you know, if you're looking, and again, this is wishful thinking, but if you're looking for a happy ending to the AMC story, I don't know. I hope it happens. I don't know if it will. Like I said, I haven't sold my shares, but I said, you know, If the cat can be successful coming out of Grumpy Cat and migrating, and I'm able to make back the money that, you know, I lost in AMC and learn that lesson, there's a happy story that here was an ape that got involved in this risky play, and I couldn't get myself out of it, but I try. Just like an education, you pay for education. I learned, and the craziest thing I saw was some of these meme coins. But the trick was, which ones do you invest in? How do you not get scammed or pump and dump? And that's why I was very careful what I invested in. And it was only then that, you know, once I got to know, I didn't go all in on Grumpy Cat right away. It was very gradual. and the more comfortable I felt with the community. And I said, you know, this is it. This is the play. If this doesn't work out, fine, move on. But I love this community and I love being a part of it. And I think what they've done, you know, one of the things with Grumpy Cat was there's an actual trademark Grumpy Cat. And when we first
they
did really well. We raced up to a $30 million market cap, and it was on its way to be the next Pepe. But then the trademark Grumpy Cat got upset and sent like a cease and desist letter, and it spooked people. It went down, took a hit, and when they had to fight back, the community got together. They hired, they got a law firm on retainer. They came up with $20,000, and I say this: what pump and dump comes up with $20,000? To get a law firm to represent
them.
I always thought was interesting. And that was sort of this detente between the two. It's like, look, we're just a meme coin. All right, we'll call ourselves Grumpy Cat Coin, not just Grumpy Cat. We'll change the look of our logo so it doesn't have blue eyes, and you can, you know, tell the difference between your trademark Grumpy Cat and ours. And we won't sell products. We won't sell books. We won't sell T-shirts. We'll stay away from that. And, you know, we'll just try to get along here. And as far as I knew, there was never a formal agreement between the two parties. And I would occasionally say, because I'd love, you know me, I like to publish books and do all this other stuff, but you couldn't do that because it might upset the Grumpy Cat community. And also, I wanted to try to do some things with charity, but I was nervous. Like, if we go out there and we say, hey, we're with Grumpy Cat Coin, we'd like to help your cat charity, but we're not the real Grumpy Cat Coin. Or if Grumpy Cat Coin saw this and like, you're using our name to cheat these charities, now you're going to rip off these cat charities, they also might get upset. Well, by rebranding as just the cat, you get away from all those issues. Those issues are gone. Now the cat is ours. The artwork is ours. The name is ours. And that's another key thing. As someone who has that experience at Disney, people would often say, you know, Grumpy Cat Coin is so long, right? You look at these other coins.
Oh, I see.
And it was so long. Now it's just the cat. That's it. Hashtag the cat. And it's also very, I'm so impressed what they did. I had nothing to do with this, by the way. This was all, you know, another part of the team and the developer. And the cat, like, we were joking about this, that there's going to be copycat coins to Bitcoin, to Doge, to Frog. Then it's so cool that and people start calling themselves, you know, the Baker or the Simon or the Russell. And I was like, God, that's so cool that you can put duh in front of stuff and it's its own little thing. And I when it first happened, I was sort of in shock. I'm like, oh my God, this was the alpha. And then, you know, you look at it and you think about it and it's like that scene in the movie where the team is really struggling, right? They're struggling on the product or whatever it is. And then someone goes off or they do. And they present it to the group, and at first it's a bit shocking, and then everybody kind of looks at each other and they say, "This is it. This is the way to go." It's funny. I just watched the movie Air about, you know, recruiting Michael Jordan.
Oh, I loved it.
Exactly. And they literally had to think different. That, you know, they had like $250,000 to spend on three basketball players, and they knew Jordan was out of their league, and Sonny Vaccaro, who sort of headed that basketball operation, he came up with the idea, instead of getting three mediocre players, why not give all of the money to Jordan and go after Jordan and don't take no for an answer? And that's what they did, and that's how they got Jordan. They also, his mom wanted a piece of the shoe. She wanted a royal.
I remember.
And that was it. I think it was that moment with Phil Knight, the head of Nike, and then sort of the marketing guy, where they weren't real happy with Sonny Vaccaro for doing all this stuff, but they all kind of look at each other and they go, this is it. This is the roll of the dice, that if this doesn't work out, Nike is out of the basketball business. But if it does, you know, it could be a game changer. And it certainly was. So that was an interesting story. But the team that did this is so impressive.
And it's great.
And it's funny. I work full time. And I've got a young family, and we're always doing stuff. So Monday through Friday, I barely have any time. That's why I like doing the podcast now, because it's so simple. If I get 20 minutes or half an hour to myself, I can do a podcast. But if I make a video, one, I've got to shower and shave and go on camera.
Of course,
and then I like to edit the graphics and do. It's such a pain in the neck that it could take hours to do one of those videos, where the podcast is pretty simple. But I barely had time to digest all of this, and it was crazy. I did migrate my coins. which means they have to leave your wallet. So for the first time, I don't have any Grumpy Cat coins. They're in the migration wallet.
Yes.
And when it's official and I claim my coins, I'll get the Decat coins. But it's crazy to give up these things. You've listened to the podcast since May. I've been dedicated, you know, to this project.
Yeah.
And it's funny to just think, okay, click a button and there they go. And you look at your account and there's no more Grumpy Cat coin there. And then you look on Etherscan, which tracks crypto wallets and what's in what. And then your wallet is gone as far as, you know,
being
Grumpy Cat. And I used to take pride at what level. I think I got up to, it was in the 40s. I was like the 40th, you know, Grumpy Cat holder.
My wallet
was, and then it's funny, as people migrated, you started moving up just because at one point I was in the 20s, maybe the 30s, but that was only because the people were migrating ahead of me. But it's that moment in the movie where you say, this is it. If we're going to do this, if we want to get off this island, if we want to get out of this building, if we want to get off this sinking ship, this is it. And if it fails, it fails, but this is the best chance we have. And it's an amazing that I see the cats in here now. And like I said, you know, and I'll be honest, I talked with my wife because we had gone through AMC and I said, look, you know, we can't just hold it. We have to either sell the Grumpy Cat, get ETH, and then wait for it to go live. And maybe we can buy more if we buy it off the open market. But if this thing shoots up and it blows past the price it's at right now, instead of having 2 trillion, we've got 1 trillion, right? And I said, and also, I'm such a part of this community. What message does that send? That I say, hey, guys, I love you, but I'm hedging my bets here. One way or the other, whether you think you're going to get it at a score and come out ahead, or you're just, you know, like, wow, if this thing bombs, at least I've got, you know, half of it in ETH now. And I said, no, I can't do that to the community. I'm all in. And I'm all in. They're all there in the migrating pool. And I put my trust in my community and the project. If it fails, it fails. But I think hopefully amazing things will happen, but we'll see. But Christopher, you know, as you pointed out, I was a conservative investor. I barely bought that Facebook stock. I wouldn't even spend the whole $1,000 on the Facebook stock. I spent $600. That's who I was. That experience kind of haunted me a little bit. And I think I was susceptible to AMC because of that. And the fact that I was, you know, I wanted to be, you know, in the movies. And for whatever reason, I got in and I couldn't get out. And hopefully I've got an education. I've learned things. I found a wonderful community in Grumpy Cat. I hope. And listen, I know, hey, you're retired. If you ever want to join us, we would love to have you, Christopher. And we love your voice. Obviously, you're retired early right now. I'll be grinding it out. So I hope people listen to you. And you know, would you ever consider doing a podcast? You talked about this. You could do it. I mean, I'm sure there's ways to, you can do it for free. A lot of these things you can start for free and then you can, build up. Have you ever considered doing something like that?
I have, and I feel like I've generated a lot of knowledge in my kind of investing years. My fear is that it would be the most boring podcast you'd ever listen to. So that would be the one thing I'd struggle with, which is really be about dry things such as portfolio construction and tax planning and so forth. I think it would put people to sleep. So I have thought about it. I follow a bunch of people. You're one of them that really kind of fascinate me. It would be a dream because I know a lot of people who have kind of done that. But for now, I'm just kind of on the sidelines listening in and very happily so.
Well, I consider you a good friend of the podcast, and I hope you we would like to consider you a friend of Grumpy Cat and hopefully the cat. Please stick around, keep an eye out of us, even if you don't invest. You know, it's you're always welcome to come to our space calls, and if you ever want to add anything, you know, I'm sure we'd love to hear from you. And it's good to get, you know, an opposing or the other side of it. That if you're afraid to have your ideas challenged, there's probably something wrong with your idea.
So true.
And I always take that to heart. That I, you know, when I see people blocking me, I'm like, what are you really blocking? Who do you?
That's right.
You know, what's your? You know, there's one guy in the AMC community, and he can be pretty rough, but he lets people talk. And he tries to protect people, but he's like, I don't block people. I'm not a coward. I respect that about him, that he doesn't automatically. It's one thing, I suppose, if you're threatening or something, or it's just like,
of course.
But, you know, if people have a differing opinion, just try to have a good conversation. And I love that we've had that. So some final thoughts, Chris, anything you want to, so you talked about the play that went bad. What are some of your plays that you're like, wow, I'm glad I did that? What are some of the, your favorite investments that have paid off?
The biggest ones for me, Russell, thanks very much as well, have been just honestly kind of boring, put to sleep, but the Canadian banks, some of the larger Canadian oil and gas companies, because the oil and gas is priced in U.S. dollars and Canadian dollar trades at a relative discount to U.S., you make a lot of extra money from your revenue of your Canadian output. So oil and gas, our pipelines, just the kind of the bedrock of our investing community, I've done really well with. They're kind of the cornerstone of my portfolios, just our telecoms and kind of the boring companies, but they make money year and out. They grow earnings. They have low to no debt. They just compound earnings over time. So it's the boring stuff, but it's worked well for me. I do have U.S. Component to that. I have a fixed income component, but it's done well. But if I could, just some parting words, Russell, I just want to say I've always found you a kindred spirit. It's a real pleasure for me to be on the podcast because I've been kind of with you every step of the way, and I considered you a friend before I knew you. That doesn't sound strange, but you accompanied on every, I'm a hiker, and you've been with me on the vast majority of my hikes, both here at home and at my cottage. And I just want to say, the plays you're involved in, sure, there's risk, but they also have a lot of torque and a lot of potential. And for your sake, I hope that Ducat is the one. I sincerely say that. And I know you're going to make it because I see you as a person who just has a lot of hope, a very optimistic person at heart. And, good people deserve good things. So I wish you all the best. And I would love to keep up the friendship. And I will be watching.
Absolutely.
The Ducat coin as it comes to play. So,
yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we've got, I think, about another 7 days of the migration period. Don't quote me on that. But it's there if you go to our Telegram or you do Twitter, if you, follow, like Chase or, any of the cats here, if you follow them on Twitter, there's Grumpy DeBaker. There you go. See, like I was telling you, DeBaker, all these things, it's amazing. We're joking. Like all the copycat, if it's successful, all the copycat, there'll be the Doge, the Frog, the Sheep,
that's the Bitcoin. Awesome.
Then it's going to be crazy if it happens. I mean, there were already copycats of Grumpy Cat. And we were just a moderately successful, launch in the beginning. So it'll be interesting to see that. Now, I have to ask you about this. Do you own any crypto?
You know what? I do not. And it's the one thing, for all the research I've done, I wouldn't know the first thing about how you acquire coins. I understand about the wallets and kind of holding your own self-custody and all the, I know about the concepts, but I'm certainly not against it. And it's just something I've hadn't had a lot of personal exposure to, but I've been following very keenly because I said, these plays have been eating my lunch for a couple of years in terms of being kind of an old economy investor. And so I've been watching and wondering, maybe I'm missing out on something. And I think there's a bit of a reversion to the mean, but there will be a future with these types of assets. So I'm definitely watching. And who knows, once I get myself educated, you might just see me doing the same thing. I'm certainly open-minded. That's why I became interested in these types of investments to begin with, is because it's lifelong learning for me. That's it never stops. And I consume tons of information here from my little office, in addition to everything else I do during the day. So I will be watching. And once again, I wish you and I wish Ducat and the community all the very best. I've enjoyed hearing about it.
Thank you. And so I'm curious, this is a historic day. We had the approvals for the Bitcoin ETFs. And obviously, as you say, you're not the biggest crypto person in the world. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think the impact of it is going to be? And do you have any predictions or any thoughts, positive or negative?
There's definitely going to be a long-term future. I do have a portion of my portfolio that's professionally managed. Again, I'm a big diversification guy, and I didn't want to do everything myself, so I handed a portion over to a professional manager, discretionary management system here from one of the chartered banks, and he said that he's got clients chomping at the bit. When are we going to be able to, when are you going to be able to deal in crypto for us? And I figured he had mostly like kind of older investors, because he has a cap that you need to be at to invest with him. And he said people are dying for it. So I think that the ETFs, kind of once they're up and running, I know the approval came across, I think there's going to be a lot of interest, and I think it's rightfully so. And kind of we need to go with the times. There's physical gold, and now there's digital gold, right? So I think it's going to be a success. I think there's a long-term future, and it's going to be super interesting to watch. So again, I'm fascinated. Anytime I hear anything new, my ears stand up on end, and I'm like, what am I missing? What am I not getting? What do I need to learn about? Because I just don't want to be a dinosaur in this. And so I'm always trying to learn new things, and your podcast just helped me immensely get up to speed with this kind of event that happened. And I wish you all the best moving forward, but it's fascinating.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny. I used to offer people, I'll send you some Grumpy Cat if you're, you know, I'll send you free. Nope. Nobody ever took me up on that offer. Free money, Christopher. Free money.
But crazy.
The thing is, there's so many scams. It's understandable because there's so many scams and there's no free lunch. And really, what I was basically saying is, it's just like a drug dealer. I'm going to give you a taste, and I know you're going to get hooked. Or I want you, you know, listen, I'll send it to you, no strings attached. But really, I want you to become part of our community. And if you're, you know, an influencer, I'd love for you to make a video. But I'm not making you, and I'm not requiring you.
Sure.
There was one YouTuber guy named, and I'll tell the story real quick, and we'll wrap things up. But his name was Tommy Eight. And he came into, over the summer, he came into one of our space calls and he asked the right questions. You seem like a really good guy. He was like, what are you doing like for charity or animal shelters? It was like, he seemed like a really good guy. He's in New Zealand and he had a small YouTube channel, kind of like mine, about 1,000 subscribers. And I was really wanting, like, this guy, I want him in our community. I want this guy to be part of us. And he kind of went away. We did a little bit, but it sort of fell off. And then I tell the story, he left me a comment and that was it. And I was like, that's all I needed. And I said, God, I want this guy in our community. And he had mentioned a crypto play to me. And I'm like, well, if I'm reaching out to people and telling them about Grumpy Cat and someone reaches out to me, you know, wouldn't it be nice to surprise them and say, hey, that thing you mentioned, I bought some. And that's what
absolutely.
I did. I playfully sent it back to Tom. I said, now it's your turn. Buy some Grumpy Cat. And he went out and he bought 49 billion Grumpy Cats. Well, and I found his wallet and I ended up sending him like another billion just to round him up to 50. And I never said, now go make a video or, hey, can you make a video? I knew he was a YouTuber. And if he wanted to make a video, he would make a video.
And
he did eventually. Now, what's funny is I was making this push to get people into Grumpy Cat. And the people in the community that knew were trying to hold me back. And they would say, hey, maybe hold off on this. And some things I would put on hold and was a back burner. But I didn't know they were rebranding Grumpy Cat. I thought maybe it was something else. Or I thought they just didn't like the idea. Because that's happened before. I present an idea and people say, no, I don't like that. And what has happened is a lot of those people that said, no, don't like that. And I sort of let it go. They left the community. I'm like, wait a minute, why did I ever listen to them? And it was sort of this renewed, it was a new year and renewed attitude. And I knew something big was going to come for Grumpy Cat. I didn't know what it was. And I thought, well, let me get on the radar of AMC community. And then when the big thing happens, then I say, see, remember I told you about Grumpy Cat? I had no idea it was going to be a rebranding thing, which is a good thing. But like if someone had gone out and bought Grumpy Cat coin, they're going to have to migrate their coins. Because what's going to happen is if you migrate it, it's one for one for the new cap. Or you can sell your Grumpy Cat, and then if you just want to walk away, you can walk away. Or you can wait and try to buy the cat on the open market, and maybe you'll get a better price. Maybe you won't. Depends on, you know, how quickly things go. The one thing you don't want to do is hold on to your Grumpy Cat because it's going to plummet in value. And essentially, it's not a rug pull in the sense that it's orchestrated to catch people up. We're telling people we're migrating.
And you need to cut over. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And right now it's almost like at least probably 42% of the Grumpy Cats have migrated to the migration wallet. Now they're still Grumpy Cats, but once they migrate, essentially if it did it today, 42% of the supply of Grumpy Cat would be sold.
Of course. Yeah.
And all the influencers, people like me and all the space calls, all that's going to end. And Grumpy Cat is going to join, you know, the community of dead coins with like 13, 16 zeros in front of them. And, you know, we'll see. But if you listen, stay in touch. And I would offer to send people Grumpy Cat, but I don't have any Grumpy Cat. So maybe in the future, even if you don't get any the cat, I'd be more than happy to send you a little bit in the future just as sort of a thank you. And I really appreciate you coming on, Christopher. Thank you so much. Yes, definitely. I'll stay in touch. Keep listening to the podcast, and we'll see how things are going. My hope is to interview more AMC apes and people that have been involved in AMC and other projects. I really want to start networking and reaching out to people and saying, hey, I have this podcast. Would you like to come on and I'll interview you? You can talk about what you're doing. And it's funny, I told my fellow, you know, Grumpy Cat community members, like, look, I might be reaching out to other projects to talk about other things. Don't think I'm leaving, you know, DeCat. You know, it's like, I just want us to start, you know,
you're building bridges
and touching other people and building these net. We're all retail investors. We're all trying to help each other.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you get so tribal that you miss out on built on making these connections. So thank
you. It's so true.
Any parting thoughts or any last words before we wrap things up?
No, just thanks again, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to come on the podcast, Russell, and you've given me a lot to think about, too, A, about the project, but B, about maybe myself getting involved. There's some people I really, really admire who do this, who do financial podcasting, and give me a lot to think about what I might want to do with some of my spare time, and I want to keep going, but just once again, though, I'm very appreciative. It's been wonderful talking to you. I've been kind of with you, whether you probably... Obviously, you didn't know it, but I've been with you for a very long time, and I'll continue to do so. I just want to wish you all the best, and thanks again for the opportunity to come on and chat.
Well, thank you, Christopher. This has been wonderful having you on, and thanks for listening to the podcast. Like I said, you're always welcome to come to a Grumpy Cat or DeCat space call and listen in. And if you ever have anything you want to add, I'm sure people would like to. We have a no FUD rule, but I think, you know, like you say, if you come in, you know, you're very respectful, and if you have a counter thought, you know, that's a good thing. You know, it's always good to be challenged a little bit. But thank you so much, Christopher. This has been wonderful. And to all the listeners out there, the Grumpy Cats, and I see my brother Matt out there. Hey, Matt. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully there'll be more cats, dogs, apes, and frogs interviews. What's interesting is I'm going to have to rebrand my logo, because obviously the Grumpy Cat is going to go away. But I've been curious. You know, I have a Doge on there, and I wonder if, you know, I might put a challenge out to the other, like the Shiba Inu community or the Doge Lone Mars community or the Floki, like the other dog communities, like, hey, who wants to be the dog on the you know, I'm rebranding it,
there you go.
I said maybe I'll make a series of videos and say whichever video gets the most views, that's going to be the new dog coin. There's another YouTuber I really like, guy named Claybro, and he's a big Shiba Inu guy. And I've been trying to get him to cover Grumpy Cat. Maybe I'll say to him, hey, do a video on Grumpy Cat or the cat, and I'll change the dog from Doge to Shiba Inu. See if he'll buy that.
There's lots of opportunity there. That sounds so cool.
Well, I'm glad you were the premiere episode, and I appreciate you coming on, and I'll definitely, you know, keep putting them out as we go through this very interesting time of the migration and getting ready to launch. Like I said, it's about 7 more days, at least for the migration. And then the launch, I think, is still kind of being